Welcome back to the West Moorabool Foundation podcast series where we're tackling health issues important to people living in our area. Hi, I'm Patrick Bonello. The West Moorabool Foundation exists to promote the health, well-being and resilience of our community. In this episode, we're tackling the growing problem of vaping, particularly amongst young people. Moorabool Shire is currently actively combating youth vaping through regional partnerships, educational programs, and stricter enforcement of smoking and vaping bans in public spaces. The council is part of the Central Highlands Vaping Prevention Project, which aims to educate students across local schools about the health risks associated with e-cigarettes. It's my pleasure to welcome Nicole Knight from the Moorabool Shire, who's the Health Promotion and Gender Equality Officer. Hey, Nicole, nice to chat.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. Thanks, Patrick.
We generally catch up before these little podcasts. We have a coffee and we have a bit of a talk and we try to nut out some questions. And one of the things that I find interesting myself is what got you into getting into health promotion? Where did that come from?
I think it was probably just a chance meeting. So I was actually in a prior life working in education settings and came on board, gosh, I think my children were just babies, came on board with a little network as a community representative, and one of the managers kind of saw the potential for me to jump into that health promotion role for 6 weeks to backfill someone that was on leave. And that person, after about 18 months, didn't actually return. So, yeah, it was just an opportunity to work in education at the time and also work in health promotion.
Oh, wow. So that's amazing, because you've been with the Shire, what, for 2 decades? Is that 20, right?
Thank you. 20 years.
Yes. It sounds longer, doesn't it, say 2 decades?
It does.
But that's pretty great that you are doing something that you obviously enjoy.
Yeah.
What is it that you enjoy the most, do you think, about your job?
Look, there's a lot of variety in the role. So every year or every health plan that we put forward has different issues that we're tackling. Some of them are continuing on for a long time because they're obviously very tricky issues to deal with. But yeah, every week is different. Every year is different. I get to work with a whole range of different organisations and people, internal teams. So yeah, it's varied and it's, yeah, it keeps me interested in the role. Yeah,
that sounds great. And does it take up a lot of time?
Well, it's a full-time role, so yeah. And look, more recently from 2020, when we ended up with the Gender Equality Act, that added another element to my role as well. So yeah, it's constantly evolving.
Yeah, and the council itself, or the Shire's health and wellbeing plan, is obviously something that is in your wheelhouse. Mm. What does that mean in terms of implementation?
Well, the plan is a 4-year plan. Yep. We have a committee that supports that plan and a lot of internal and external stakeholders that work with us. There's a lot of planning that goes into, like, pre-planning, yeah, for the plan. So before we finish the current one in that final year, we're actually starting to gather research and data and information on what some of those key health issues are going to be that we're going to address in the next plan. So there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. So that fourth year is an extremely busy year, mm, for council. But I guess we keep our eye on what's going on along the way as well. And so even though we have a health plan, sometimes there are other opportunities and things that come along that we can see the benefit in us engaging with as well.
Well, actually, it's a lovely little segue that you've led into, because, of course, we're here to talk about vaping. Mm. Tell me, vaping has been identified by the Shire as an issue that is really important to try to tackle. Where does that come into play? Tell us a little bit about where your role sits in that space.
Look, I guess, the view is that council has always been in a more of a compliance space around things like smoking. More recently, I think it was 2024, legislation changed and it also included vaping. So, we're still working on that compliance, making sure that people understand where they should and shouldn't be smoking or vaping. But we also, through the health plan, we work on prevention. So prevention, often we're looking at those earlier, when are people actually starting to vape? Who are the people that we should be working with? And who's the target group?
So let's tackle that. So Who are the demographic that we're most concerned about at the moment with vaping?
From our perspective, I would say it's young people.
Yeah.
I think we know that there is the potential for young people to be engaged with vaping earlier. We know that smoking has declined, and in that space and time, vaping has become the next thing that is addicting young people to nicotine. And we know that there are risks around addiction, and we know that there are risks around nicotine addiction, but on top of that nicotine addiction, we also have the toxic chemicals that are included in vapes that are concerning, and we don't know what those long-term impacts are going to be for young people.
Yeah. I spoke to two experts, particularly in this area, a 16 and an 18-year-old, and the question I asked was, you know, how many of your mates are vaping? And it was about 50%.
Yeah.
And that blew my mind. I guess I'm so out of touch with that side of things. And from a community engagement and health implications, that's really disconcerting if it's that age group, particularly those sorts of young people getting into this area. Can I just touch on vaping itself is quite interesting. I did a bit of deep diving into the history of vaping and e-cigarettes, and I didn't realise this, that, you know, it was actually the idea of smokeless tobacco was in 1963. Was looked at, and it failed dismally. they couldn't do anything with it. And then computer pioneer in 1979 created the first commercialised e-cigarette. So it's actually quite a while ago, but it wasn't until 2003 that the technology was kind of there to produce this. And what really interests me is that initially the idea of these e-cigarettes was to get people off cigarette smoking. The perception was it was going to be a positive way for people to get off smoking and as transition to give it up. But then it became somewhat insidious as nicotine started to permeate. And I think the companies manufacturing thought this is a great way to hook people in. Mm. And actually, it really feels insidious to me that this is a product designed to hook people. Mm. I mean, it's everything that we hated about tobacco is now in this e-cigarette format, isn't it? And it's more sexy because it's electronic and it's got that real appeal to a different demographic.
Yeah, no, that's right. And look, I think, you know, the position from health services really is that e-cigarettes are not a way to actually stop smoking.
No, not anymore, that's for sure.
So if you're out there talking to, you know, a pharmacist or a GP, they're really not going to be directing people towards that. That being said, there are still options. You know, people still do have those options, but the legislation has reduced it down to specific things that can be provided through pharmacies now. So, yeah, it's an interesting deep dive, you know, when you're talking about how things have evolved and things that didn't work at the time. But we do have big industries behind these types of promotions. And so, you know, the messaging out there might be, hey, this is an alternative to cigarettes and it's not as bad as cigarettes. But we know that that's not the case.
And that's the travesty of this, is that we're really not fully going to know. And, you know, like smoking, the long-term effects of smoking kind of weren't realised. You know, we saw it in films, it was sexy. And if we go back to the 30s, 40s and 50s and even in the First World War, I think the soldiers were paid with cigarettes. You know, it was a totally different mindset. But as we started to get more educated to what the health implications were of this sort of, you know, using tobacco. Now, We touched on the demographic and you actually thankfully provided me some statistics, and that kind of blew me away because there's been an increase in young, we're talking 14 to 17 year olds, that have their usage has jumped quite dramatically, because it was 1.8% jumped to 9.7% in a survey from 2022 to 2023. Mm. Now, that's, I think 14-year-olds are just children, you know, and they're getting into this. It's really quite frightening.
Yeah. And look, we know previously there's been a lot of work in reducing smoking in groups and, you know, targeting young people, and we know we could see that those percentages of smokers in those age brackets had dropped significantly. We could see all of the influence that health services and advertising and legislation had made in that space. And then all of a sudden we're seeing the emergence of vaping in that space for those same groups of people. And so we know that there are certain groups of people that are being targeted to increase that addiction, which potentially without the access to vapes, and we know vapes are still out there, we know that there are other ways that people are getting access to them, but we also know that access to cigarettes is more difficult. The trouble is that not having access to vapes for children that are already addicted and young people that are already addicted means that they are now looking towards smoking. So we are seeing that gradual increase in smoking within those age brackets again because of that addiction to nicotine.
Wow. So we've got a generation of kids because, as you rightly pointed out, the legislation changed, the laws have changed, it is illegal, that you can buy prescription through a pharmacy, you can access vapes, can't you?
You can. They don't require a prescription.
Okay.
Through a pharmacy. You know, doctors can prescribe also. The difficulty with this age group is that those prescriptions or those the access to vapes in pharmacies in Victoria is legislated for people 18 and above.
Yep.
So if you have a young person who is already addicted to vapes, then the only alternatives you have are those regular alternatives that we know that support people with nicotine addiction, things like patches or gums and those types of things.
Yes, I've heard gums is something that's becoming more popular with kids, and I know he's talking to this 16-year-old and he was saying that there are kids in his class who are having them in school, like during studies and exams, where the gums, that they literally sit in your gum in your mouth and that's the nicotine just seeps out. Is that how it works?
I think there's another term called pouches, or something like that.
Yeah, I know.
So it's there are sort of other things that are happening out in society that we're not 100% across. The actual data on those things is not open or not clear to us at the moment.
It's a legal activity. Yeah, that's hard.
It's
too,
a legal
isn't it?
Activity, yeah. And anything that is nicotine based is regulated.
Yeah.
So things that are containing nicotine that are out there that aren't regulated are of course an issue. But I guess at this point in time, we don't, you know, even with vaping numbers, like we've got 22, 23, a little bit of data there. We know it's 2026 now.
Yeah.
But a lot of these surveys that we rely on for that data, they don't run every year. So for us, you know, we may be looking at, you know, a couple of years down the track, again, seeing some data that may show an increase or a decrease, depending on the level of access that young people have to vapes.
Mm. I guess the introduction to young people in terms of peer pressure, older siblings, older friends, is that the trigger point? Is that what's happening in terms of how kids are getting into it in the first place? Do we know?
It's all of the above.
Yeah.
Anecdotally, people are saying the first time I had one was because I was in a group of friends. We know what peer pressure is like, and there is a lot of vape sharing that goes on. So if I don't happen to have a vape this week because I couldn't get one, but I know my friend's got one, or I know my older brother's got one, or maybe mum and dad have got one and I'm just, sneaking their vape as well.
Yep.
So, it's not like they can go down to the local shop and get one. And depending on where you live, you know, there may be areas, we don't know exactly in Moorabool, like a lot of these statistics are quite wide-ranging. So we don't know in Moorabool whether there are particular places that young people have greater access to these things. But statistically, we're told that, you know, rural areas are less likely. It doesn't mean they're not accessing them at all, because you obviously know young people that are.
Yeah.
But it's probably a little bit more difficult for them.
Yeah, look, and I guess the thing is, particularly if I think about Balan, a lot of these children or these young people who get to secondary school, well, there is no secondary school in Balan, so they're going to Ballarat, they're going to Bacchus Marsh or to Melton. The reality of it is that, you know, they're then engaging with a whole new network of people who are separate to the local community we have here, and I guess accessibility means that it's a much broader opportunity to be able to access anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, good point.
Yeah. So tell me, the Shire has teamed up with other councils. This is an initiative on the issue of vaping specifically, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. There was an opportunity through Vic Health, so around $200,000 for groups to come together. So it wasn't pitching it at one specific council to do all of the work. They were really keen to see a little bit more of collective impact across different areas. So as an area, the Central Highlands local governments came together with the health services and said, hey, can we put together something? We did need a lead. So Ballarat being a bigger council with a few more resources and potentially being more central to everybody else, they actually applied on behalf. So we were partners in that project. And within that project, we had a lot of different actions, sort of mostly targeting schools and sporting clubs where we know young people tend to congregate and that places that have a little bit more influence over young people. So, yeah, and I guess as part of that, we, you know, Mirrabool took on a little bit of a role trying to engage with schools around some education. And we've also been looking at strengthening that legislative knowledge of people, so looking at signage and compliance with signage so that people in the community understand where it's important that we're protecting young people in the environment. So things like sporting clubs in those venues, playgrounds, which is another space, skate parks is also legislated, and also making sure that all of our early year services, so parents dropping off their children, you know, they're not standing outside in the car park or outside the front doors, and their staff are aware of that as well.
Yeah, for sure. I like the slogan, seeing through the haze. It resonates and it makes a lot of sense. Now, this was targeting 14 and 15-year-olds. What was that about?
Yeah, so that, look, that program is a program that has been developed with the support of state government. So there is a package there that schools can actually take on board, and originally that package was looking specifically at around the 14 to 15 year age, you know, year 8, year 9 students, where we know that that peer pressure and that those rates of vaping were actually increasing. And then within a little bit of time, because I mean we have one state high school here, so it's a little bit trickier for us, but you know, looking at Ballarat and those other areas, there were a range of high schools that could be targeted. Then we considered that our primary schools were important to look at as well, because I guess when we talk back to our health and wellbeing plan, we're talking about prevention. So we want to get in there before these kids actually have their first vape. Unfortunately, there are some children already in that space that are experimenting as well. So, but that program, during the time that we were rolling out to high schools, they rolled out the grade 5-6 program as well. So we were able to then engage with Lala Primary School to have them go through the modules. So they're just 8 simple modules that they could roll out with their kids, and looking at the end of that, creating some campaign materials. So the children actually created different things that could be circulated through their community, through to the children and the parents at the school, so that they could support the messaging around that campaign.
Because I think what I like about kids too is if you can get that message early enough, then positive peer pressure can also be a strong motivation for them as well. Mm. So the say no to vaping, the say no to cigarettes can actually really be quite a positive reinforcement for them. And kids are quite canny at that age. You know, they're smart. If you explain it to them, I love that you can have a positive reinforcement of a really good message, a strong message. So I think tackling those older primary school kids is a really key avenue or a way to kind of start that catalyst and get them thinking positively about their health. I mean, I guess one of the things that struck me, and I don't know, this is my own theory, this is not based on science or anything, but the current generation of young people probably is a little bit blind to the effects of tobacco. And what I mean by that is, you know, when I was growing up, I knew of people in the neighbourhood who, you know, had died of emphysema. And you know, one of my closest friends, his mother had half her tongue cut out. Mm-hmm. She had tongue cancer and was a smoker. But because generationally, we've really reduced the number of people who have been smoking and long-term smoking for a lot of the community is now in the past, there's almost a generational gap to those effects. And I wonder whether young people are a little bit blind to it because they didn't see the trauma associated with the use of nicotine.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's probably a potential, impact of, you know, all the good work that was done around tobacco. But I also think that young people, those types of campaigns that we grew up with, you know, the seatbelt campaigns, the smoking ones, where it was quite graphic and confronting for us, I think young people are probably less confronted in a lot of ways by those types of campaigns, because what they're seeing in the media, what they're seeing in movies now, you know, the level of graphic violence and things like that that they're experiencing, it has that, you know, that the potential that when we put those graphic things in front of them now, they're like, yeah, we've seen worse than that.
They're desensitised. So
it's desensitising. Yeah. But then you've also got the other side where not only are they potentially desensitised, they have access to, you know, online. So the current legislation about children being online, you know, is working to a point. But children are still getting influenced. They're seeing people online who are influencing their understanding of things. So we are seeing a lot more, and they are seeing a lot more positioning of vapes within what those influencers are doing. So even if they're not specifically saying, hey, here's a vape, this is great, you should try this, there's product placement. There's always been product placement. There is a lot of money that is still being put into these things by those industries. So the influencing, it's not accidental. There is a deliberate reason for that.
Yeah. The ban on social media for under 16s, I think it's only been about successful for about 40% of kids who were on social media. So the statistics coming out now, a little over a year after the ban came in place, has shown that it's been very difficult. The government is trying to put the onus, obviously, onto the big companies like your Metas and Googles, but it's been a big struggle, and it's really difficult to kind of roll that out, and that's been problematic. So what we now know is, yes, kids still have access, so they're getting that passive kind of message going through all the time. And the problem with this is, as you pointed out, it's the big companies like your big tobaccos we thought about when we were kind of, I guess, in, you know, exposed to that messaging. The reality of it is this is quite insidious, the way that it kind of seeps into that messaging and influences. You know, there's no control. Television had strict guidelines. You couldn't run certain ads after school, before dinner time, but there is no regulation on social media, and that's the struggle, I guess, for educators and for people like you who work in that health space, is how do you get the message out when there's all these contra messages totally flooding through? That must be a challenge.
Yeah, it is. And look, I think actually working with schools is a really positive thing, because the experience with Lel and going out and being invited to a presentation by their leaders, their student leaders, who, you know, they put together a speech. They all took part. They had the grade 3-4s and all the rest of the grade 5-6s there. They were going through, with their own words, saying, here are the things that we've learned. Here are the problems with vaping. And the take-home message really that they were drilling down to was, you will be going off to high school and you need to know this now, so that when someone comes up to you and says, hey, do you want to try this, that they're better informed, and they also, you know, maybe have some language around how do I actually say no to somebody? How do I do that and feel comfortable about it and not be worried that I'm going to be ostracized from that group? So I think our role is really about trying to educate young people and educate parents about how they can support their young person as well.
That's a really great toolbox to give to these kids as they progress through, because if you're finishing primary school, you're the biggest kid at the school when you're in grade 6. Suddenly, when you go to secondary school, you're the baby of the school. And we know, we've spoken about peer pressure and how difficult it is to resist that, but giving them those tools is fantastic. So the Shire has been really active and has been trying to take an active role in health, and not just in vaping, obviously, in a general sense, to see, I guess, to tap into what's happening in the community. And you see that as an ongoing morphing into whatever the reaction or whatever the community needs.
No, that's right. And look, I think we were hopeful maybe that we would get all schools on board. We know that schools have more and more things imposed on them, and they have so many things that they're already needing to do. So we realise that it's not always the right time when we come up with a this project to say, you know, can you do this year, or could you do it next year? But what we're hoping is that through examples like LELL or through examples that will come through from the schools in the other LGAs that are part of this project, is that we will have some really good examples that we can then speak to those schools or speak to those sporting clubs about, so that they still have that opportunity. I mean, this is not asking them to do the Seeing Through the Haze. This is not a cost to schools. It's really something that is off the shelf that the school, LELL, have basically said it was well done and it was so easy to deliver and the kids really engaged with it. So I think there are still the opportunities for our local schools to pick up on that, and opportunities for council to actually have those conversations with them.
I think if parents are listening and they can put pressure on their own schools, they can kind of say, look, we feel this is something that we want to protect our kids from. Tell me, what should parents be looking out for if they think their kids might be vaping?
I think it's really hard, because I think often those types of things, kids know that they're not supposed to be doing it. So they're the things that they're going to be hiding. Mm. I think looking for changes in behaviour, because we know that vaping can have a whole range of different effects on young people. It can affect, you know, nicotine can actually affect appetite. It can affect their sleep. They may see that their child may be having more asthma attacks or coughing or just little physical signs that something's not quite right. So I think that's really important to keep your eye on. But also, it's really about the conversations. So having open conversations with your kids, maybe just approaching it. And we know that, you know, particularly teenagers, they don't want to have those face-to-face conversations. No. I would say from experience, the best conversations I ever had with mine was sitting in the car. Because I'm looking at the road. I'm not looking at you. I'm not interrogating you. We're just having a little bit of a chat. So, you know, it could be chats about, are you seeing kids vaping at school? I mean, you might see a bit of twitching going on, so that might be another indication. So I think for parents, the best thing that they could do is actually go to some of those resources that are out there that give you the language to have those conversations, and maybe how to do it well. So things like Quit are really good in terms of when you know something's already happening. And what do we need to do to help that person to get out of that addiction? But there are also some other ones. There is uncloud.org, which has some really good tips and tricks for parents' fact sheets and those types of things. And look, you know, people can also go and have a look at that Seeing Through the Haze program to see whether they think it's good for their school, and maybe talk about whether their school is actually going to implement those education pieces.
Fantastic. Nicole, thank you so much for being part of our podcast series. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Patrick.
Nicole Knight, Health Promotion and Gender Equality Officer at the Moorabool Shire. This episode has been brought to you by the West Moorabool Foundation, which aims to support the health and well-being for those of us living in the Shire and beyond. Visit our website at westmoorabboolfoundation.com to find out more and to access additional resources. Thanks for listening. I'm Patrick Bonanno.